I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
What a brilliant day to be alive it is today,
it's
Ian.
It's really horrible weather.
It is, isn't it? I always think, though, if you start talking about the weather with someone, it's because you've run out of interesting things to talk to them about.
Weather.
Like, you might as well just stop talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that, ladies
and
gentlemen.
Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next week.
Goodbye. Yes, no, we're going to do a podcast before we say goodbye. And we're going to start off with something that sounds rather a lot like the following. In fact, we're actually going to get very cross indeed today. And there's a serious chance we are going to sound a bit like a stuck record. But that is the risk we face when discussing plans for things as contentious as the following. The Guardian wrote this week that the government has revived plans to make pornography websites carry out age checks, which would require British users to provide data such as their credit card or passport details to prove they are over 18. Or, if I doctor that lead to just be a little bit more accurate about how things would play out, it would sound a bit like this. The Guardian wrote this week that the government has revived plans to inadvertently make social media platforms and image hosting websites carry out age checks, which would require British users to provide data such as a credit card or passport detail to prove they are within arm's reach of someone who's over 18. Anyway, The Guardian actually continues. Ministers said the forthcoming online safety bill will be altered to ensure that commercial porn sites are brought within its scope. This is an update to the draft legislation, which now applies to providers of user-generated pornography, such as OnlyFans. Now, people who listen to our live show or get the unedited version on demand will know that Ian has been considering becoming an OnlyFans model. Now, it sounds like a slanderous piece of libel, but he's here to defend himself. Go on.
No, I'm absolutely not. I just, it's, you know, it's one way of making money. You know, if I was 20, maybe it would be an option. But okay. I'm not. I'm double that and a plus a few years.
I still think there's a market for it. Anyway, Digital Minister Chris Philp said it's too easy for children to access pornography online. Quote, parents deserve peace of mind that their children are protected online from seeing things no child should see, he said. I agree. Quote, we are now strengthening the online safety bill so it applies to all porn sites to ensure we achieve our aim of making the internet a safer place for children. The digital minister did not say proof of age would be required to access other things online, such as how to create homemade explosives or how to stream live beheadings or how to absorb disinformation about the dangers of vaccines or the benefits of eating disorders for 13-year-old girls, all of which I would choose over, you know, a standard, perfectly pleasant sex video if I had children. If someone asked me which was the more likely to ruin their lives long term. Anyway, the reason we're stuck in this, well, stuck record territory is because the Conservative Party has been trying to get this into law since about 2015. I think it was actually a campaign promise, wasn't it? I'm going off script.
I believe so.
I believe it might have been under Cameron. And it keeps running into challenges such as opposition from privacy campaigners over who'd be the gatekeeper of identity checking information, you know, how they're going to prevent leaks of people's smut preferences, which is a very legitimate concern, I would say, and how to stop heavy-handed laws actually making life online worse and more tedious for everyone, even though they are, with the best of intentions, being designed to protect children, which obviously is good. You only have to look at something like the EU's cookie pop-up situation that we have in Europe and in the UK, obviously, to see how heavy-handed laws can just spiral out of control and defeat the object that they were created to protect in the first place. Now, The Guardian also wrote that the government has said any age assurance method used by pornography sites would have to protect privacy. Good. However, individual companies will be allowed to decide how to comply with the new rule. Although the communications regulator, that's Ofcom, for people who haven't listened to the show before, shame on you, shame on you, may recommend some age checking technologies, which is probably a good thing. Now, before I give Ian a chance to get his word in edgeways, pornography outlets that fail to comply with the legislation face being fined 10% of their income or being blocked by UK internet service providers. I think I know which one would happen. Mm. The latter.
Yes.
Some solutions to the checks include things like checking a user's age against data held by a mobile phone provider, using a credit card. The Guardian also wrote that age verification providers, the Age Verification Providers Association, said a range of methods could also be used, including artificial intelligence programs that estimate a user's age from a selfie.
Oh, good.
What could possibly go wrong? Well, Ian, that's a good question to hand to you, I suppose. What could possibly go wrong?
Well, I mean, absolutely everything. If we're going to... I mean, look, there are ways of doing biometric checks that don't involve sending the actual photograph to a government institution or anything like that. It is perfectly possible. But I'm nervous about it for this context because we're basically potentially tying pieces of information together, aren't we? Like, you know, who is this person and what are they looking at? Like you mentioned earlier on in the story, it's a problem if those things ever leak. It's a real problem and not just like an embarrassment thing. It's, you know, I'm sure you'll remember the Ashley Madison hack that ultimately cost a number of people their lives because
this was the website about having extramarital affairs.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And there were members of that site who were outed by the leak, and they took their own lives. And you know that is a small portion of the damage that could be done to, you know, people who live in countries where homosexuality isn't, you know, legal or is, you know, otherwise
yes.
Not a,
I mean, we're talking here about UK law, but I think your point yes. still stands in that there are families of people who are
very
whose culture
so.
Or background frown on something like that, and you know, a young person may be of perfectly legal age and want to access that, but obviously, as you say, if that leaks, it can cause enormous problems.
Yeah, and you know, people have to let their friends and families know about their personal lives when they're ready. You can't just have it coming out at random times. It's just not acceptable. That's the first problem. The other problem is that they, you know, I mean, to be fair, if you were to just block all the adult sites, that is one solution. And then, you would apply, I guess, to your ISP to have that block removed, maybe. The thing is, ISPs already offer that service. It's already possible on virtually every major internet service provider to have an adult content block put on your service. So how is this going to be any different?
There are a couple of ways.
Yeah.
Because the government will point to things like, or rather ministers will point to things like there being an age gate for buying alcohol and an age gate for buying a lottery ticket. But in both of those circumstances, the user is expecting something physical to come back to them. They need to be identified in order to receive a jackpot or to receive booze in the mail. Whereas with pornography purely digital content like this, they need to prove for access, but the access is the product, really. So it's not like they can be persuaded that actually there's a legitimate reason to give this over. They're just going to either work a way around it with a VPN or go to a smaller website that isn't subject to the
yep.
law, because these things tend to have a cutoff that it applies to the big, you know, the big players or the big ISPs, as we saw with piracy and BitTorrent and things. And then the other side of it is what is an adult website? And this is why it's been called into question whether something like Reddit or Twitter would be subject to age checking, because
both
Reddit both host a lot of adult content, but they're not a paid for platform of user generated content in the way that OnlyFans is, and therefore is now subject to this revised legislation.
Which makes perfect sense, because OnlyFans is already presumably doing verification through credit cards.
Yes, but we've seen that it's not totally bulletproof, because we've seen examples on there of models who are found to be underage, and they've addressed that. So it's not a foolproof system, and it is always going to be possible to take somebody's credit card. I mean, true story, I once used my grandma's credit card to sign up to hotornot.com. Now, I must point out, she didn't know about it. She did say, I can't remember what exactly I said I was doing on hotornot.com. It turns out, meeting a girlfriend I dated for 6 months.
Oh, right.
So, it, you know, money well spent.
Yeah, absolutely.
On the subscription. The girlfriend didn't charge me, although I paid in other ways. What was my point?
Oh, God knows, mate.
Sort of got lost in the drama there. The point is, I think, that we think that this is good intentioned and obviously good to protect kids from accidentally stumbling across pornography, but kids will be kids, and kids are very clever.
As you said, it doesn't work, because it doesn't take into account the sharing of videos on WhatsApp. It doesn't, email, all the other ways that people can get videos. It doesn't preclude people from putting a bunch of them on USB stick. None of it works. It doesn't work. And I think part of my angst now is that there are groups of people in the public sphere who are fairly influential, and I'm thinking about Mumsnet and stuff like that, and they say things like, any attempt at protecting children is a good thing, and I fundamentally don't agree with that. Like, I feel like the internet is an awful place, and it's parents' responsibility to take charge of their children's access and make sure that they are kept as far away from it as possible.
Now, and this is good that you talk about this, because you have two small children.
Yes,
I don't. And I can sit here on my high horse and talk about, you know, the good intentions of this law and how it's unlikely to work and so on. But, you know, you have kids, and they are, if you don't mind me saying, I'm sure, of ages that, you know, some inadvertent exposure to adult content is likely to be rather confusing for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's definitely possible for that to happen, you know, given that my daughter has a phone and, you know, and you can't control who sends you stuff sometimes. I feel like it's at home, it's something I can do something about. I could instigate site blocking for those sites if I felt it was appropriate, or I could just be honest with them and say, look, you know, this is a thing, but, you know, you're going to have to be aware that it's not something that represents reality. You have to have these conversations. I hope that they're conversations that people are having at school anyway.
Yeah. Well, a couple of good points have come up in the live chat here, and I think Nick's is particularly pertinent here. Many rules and laws aren't perfect, but is it an argument not to try? Just because you can't help all kids, shouldn't you help some? And I think that's a very, very good point, because laws are not perfect. But at the same time, if everyone is telling you that something is likely to fail and potentially make things worse, that might be a reason to still try, but try it a different way.
Yes,
because laws are quite hard to repeal once they're in the process of, once they're in power.
Yeah, I agree. I do think there are things that we could try. I don't think that a unilateral block like this is the right approach. I don't think it will work. I think it still opens people up, and it will breed complacency, and people will feel that they're protected, and they won't be.
Hmm. Are there any? How would we do this? Because we've been quite down on this as a piece of legislation, which is due, I believe, to be presented to Parliament quite soon. You know, this is something that is coming back around for debate. You know, it's very likely that the online safety bill, isn't it now?
Yeah,
it's something that could come into force this year.
I feel like the appropriate approach would be to set up a service that people can use if they want to, that has a very comprehensive list of sites that are blocked. And if you want to use it, then make sure that it's something that all the ISPs are able to use, like a centralized database, and then give parents the opportunity to opt into it and put a group of people on it as full-time jobs who are able to react quickly, add new sites, that kind of stuff, and make it a centralized thing, but give people the choice if they want to opt into it or not.
Mm, okay. Now, Nick also asked another question, which I think is a good question because it keeps us thinking. I'd like to be clearer as to what you think the downsides are. And I think that's fair because we maybe haven't been as articulate on that. From my perspective, the downsides are that if you say that the big players and websites that are producing or hosting pornographic material, they have to put up an age gate, then it immediately creates a secondary market for less responsible websites to not do, which then simply allows people who hit an age gate to say, oh, I'll go somewhere else then. And then they go to another site where perhaps they don't have the resource to be policing the content in a way that some of the bigger players tend to, using things like AI or to expedite takedown requests or to keep particularly horrific content off, you know, things that glorify abuse. And I don't mean in the CSAM sense, but in the sense of very violent and aggressive sexual content that is still legal, but, you know, not exactly just two people having a cuddle without the clothes on. Yeah. The other side of it is that where do you draw the line with social media? Because they host the content, they actively know that they host the content. And so being the size that they are, they would potentially fall subject to this, which could then mean that sites like Reddit and Twitter would essentially have to make a choice of blocking UK users or paying up in order to keep serving UK users. We've seen in the past with, say, GDPR, that is often easier to just say, well, we just won't serve the UK then. For instance, there are publishers in the US who still do not allow people in Europe to access their newspaper websites because it's too expensive and cumbersome for them to try and implement GDPR. So in that scenario, you then get people who just say, fine, we'll just block people from that particular country from access, no problem. And that's not good, because then it cuts people who are legitimately entitled to view things that aren't pornographic, and they can't do it simply because of fear of the law. And then the third reason is that, as we've seen with things like the blocks, if you remember, there was that case about 10, 12 years ago where I think it was the Internet Watch Foundation put a block on the IP address behind Wikipedia to block people from viewing that Scorpions album that has a naked child on the cover, basically blocked Wikipedia for all of the UK because they said, right, well, we need to add this to the block list because this particular page is on here. And that basically meant that Wikipedia went offline for everyone in Britain for a while. Or with the Ashley Madison leak, where people had their data leaked because it wasn't protected properly, and some people were caught out for having affairs, and some people ended up taking their lives. So those are the kinds of reasons why these sorts of approaches sometimes have a habit of not working the way that people want. And generally speaking, the people who really want to access that stuff, or who really want to make somebody see it against their will, they tend to find ways around doing it. And that's the reason why we're skeptical on this problem. Well, if you have a view on this, and I'm sure you do, and I'm sure they're not all in agreement with things Ian and I said, do send us your thoughts, hello@uktechshow.com, or tweet them at us. What is our Twitter? @textmessagepod, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
I believe that's the way. We've only had it for 7 years. You thought we'd have known it by now, but I think that's what it is. And let us know, and we'll come to your feedback next week.
Now, Nate, the other week, I told you and our Patreon subscribers about my ban from commenting on Amazon purchases.
You did.
I did. And so this is going to be a slightly different section now, because I imagine you're going to have questions as we go through, and I'll do my best to answer them. But in a fit of rage, I made a GDPR request to Amazon, which you can do very simply on its website, and asked for all my data. And a couple of weeks passed, and nothing happened. And I thought, oh, maybe it's just not coming. And then out of the blue, yesterday or the day before, I think, an email turned up and said, your data's ready. Click here to download.
And so, can I just ask a very quick question? I think you might have missed a point out here that this was because you've been banned from reviewing stuff.
That's right. Yeah, I've been banned from reviewing.
Didn't we?
Yeah, exactly. And I know that not everyone has the Patreon, and it was an extra message, wasn't it? I talked about it.
Yeah.
So I've been banned. I was frustrated by it. I feel like I've seen a lot of people talking about it on Twitter as well. And it seems like it's quite common for people to get banned from commenting on or reviewing Amazon things. And they've done nothing wrong. And I wanted to see if I could work out why. So I thought, well, I'll get the data and see. And as you'll find out in a minute, I did get a sort of answer, but it hasn't changed anything. It hasn't really added any light. But what I have got is this enormous treasure trove of data that I didn't expect to get, really. Although I suppose I should have done. It's about 50 to 75 different download links that each contain an aspect of my history with Amazon. It includes every purchase I've made on Amazon since 2003, including some so old they don't even have current ASIN numbers, so they no longer work. You can't find out what they were, although there is a list of things in English as well, rather than just in numbers. It includes that Xbox that we talked about the other week that blew up, that had to be replaced. And it contains payment method, cost, purchase date, shipping date, etc. And it also, this particular sheet, allows me to calculate exactly how much money I've spent over the 533 orders I've made with Amazon in the last 20 years.
So, no.
Yeah, so have a guess how much money I've spent with Amazon since 2013.
Since 2003?
Since 2003, yeah.
My God. How much have you spent on... I don't know. And ladies and gentlemen, we do script our show. But,
yeah, I've left it out.
But he's left it out, so I can't see. He's just written, reveal amount after guessing.
Yeah, I've got a sum in an Excel spreadsheet that's revealing...
Have you?
Yep.
Well, we're getting some guesses actually in the live chat. Gutherman says £10,000. Kate says £12,000. Nick says £15,000. John says £17,000. I mean, I'm just going to continue the trend and say 20, but right. I actually have a feeling it's going to be more than that. It's going to be something like 40 grand.
No.
Mike says 21 grand.
Someone has pretty much got it right from those guesses.
Oh. Well, okay, so it has to be less than mine, presumably.
Yeah.
Which means it's less than Mike's. Sorry, Mike. Gutherman, 10K?
Not quite. It's Kate. It's £12,734.35.
Wow. You win a sticker, Kate.
Yeah.
That's what you win.
Or a hug. Congratulations.
you can have an Ian cuddle.
Yeah.
Hashtag OnlyFans. Okay. that's amazing. What else did you find?
Oh, my God. I found everything. I've got a list of every single thing I've streamed from Prime Video. I've got a recording of every single Alexa trigger. So, she's going to chirp up in one of the bedrooms, I think. God. Anyway. So every time you say the wake word, obviously... Immediately after that, it records a small amount of audio to process. I've got 1.6 gigabytes of WAV files that have...
Wait, hang on. I thought they deleted that.
I think you can request for it to be deleted. There is a button in the app that enables you to delete your history.
So Amazon's just sitting there on 1.6 gig of your... personal home recordings.
Yeah, and I'm not a heavy user, so goodness only knows what the record is, but someone out there has got to have 20, 30 gigs worth of WAV files. And, you know, that they're tiny, so there's a lot of them. Because
have you listened
only,
to them?
I've listened to some of them, yeah. I was going to send you, like, one, but I couldn't really find one that was amusing enough.
Maybe let's do an extra message. Maybe I'll request mine, and we'll do it. I mean, yeah. I don't use... any Amazon products, so that one will be a bit boring.
Well, but, if you didn't delete your audio, all the stuff that you did use in there will still be there.
Gutherman says in live chat, you can also request them not to save recordings. I assume right. that'd be an option, but clearly for yours, the default is save and amass 1.6 gig of them. We'll come back. Maybe there's something fun we could do with that. But carry on. That's
yeah. I mean,
that's amazing.
It's quite the whole thing's been quite interesting, really. Like the data doesn't seem particularly well structured to me. I've also got a list of music that has been played on Amazon Prime. I've got a weird sheet that's got some tracking data for a device being used. So it's like a number of milliseconds of use, reason for stopping, and it's like screen off. So it must have been a tablet or a phone or something that was connected to Amazon. I don't know why they're tracking that, but it's so strange. Now, obviously, the question that I was trying to answer here was, why am I banned? And part of the data has included all of my reviews, and I've looked through them and I still can't find a compelling reason for a ban. There's nothing there that would suggest that I should have been kicked off. There is one thing, and the data set is called retail.communitytrust.communitycontentcontributioneligibility.
And it's catchy.
Able to submit community content? No. That's basically all that's in the sheet. It also has meets community content participation requirements. On Amazon.com, no. On Amazon.co.uk, yes. So I guess that's just whether or not you're actually allowed to review products on each of those sites. I don't think I've ever bought anything from Amazon.com. So I'm not surprised that I'm not eligible to do any reviewing on there. But I am on Amazon.co.uk, but I'm not able to submit content, actually.
Have you Googled that string? And seeing if other people have written about this problem, and seeing if that sheds any light on the issue.
I just have. It's not showing anything up.
Nothing.
Google doesn't search that kind of thing very well. I could put it in quotes to see if it works.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't show anything. So I'd maybe people aren't requesting their data. It was an interesting process. I mean, obviously, I am skeptical because. All this data is fine. Obviously, there's nothing in here that's particularly, you know, incriminating towards Amazon. But I also don't believe that this is the extent of the data that they keep. For example, there must be some scoring somewhere that it affects how they treat you when you try and return a product. Because we know that they have a sort of a way of keeping track of people who return a surprising amount of stuff and things like that. You know, so there is obviously some stuff going on behind the scenes that I'm not privy to, but you know, most of the rest of it is all of the sort of standard stuff that you'd expect. I let me tell you how many show. Apparently, I've streamed 2,813 things from Amazon Prime.
So that would be any individual episodes or what about music? Does that include music?
No, that doesn't include music. Music is separate.
That's just Prime Video.
Yeah, let's see what's in. I mean, I don't use Amazon Music, but my daughter often does play stuff using it. That's got 10,000 individual entries for things that have been played.
I mean, that's definitely not a service you want to associate with our previous topic, because imagine getting a GDPR data dump from Pornhub.
Well, that data must exist, presumably. So, I mean, okay, so you might not have a user account on an adult site, but there'll be some identifying data. Like, they're pretty good at keeping track of people, aren't they? It's half their business. So presumably somewhere there is a database that exists, but you would have no way of requesting it because you'd have no way of giving them any information about yourself. Maybe IP address?
I suppose. But if you have a dynamic IP address, that's going to change every few days.
Most dynamic IP addresses don't change that often, to be honest.
Well, keeping on this point, this hasn't got you any closer to finding out why Amazon doesn't let you rant about products you hate on its website.
And no, it doesn't. You know, like I said, I've got a sheet that has all of my reviews. So retail reviews, Amazon verified purchases, number two. That's just got weird stuff in it. There's nothing useful there. The amount of data is so overwhelming that it's very difficult for me to say. What I have is this sheet here I'm looking at now has every review I've written, and it has a status, and some of them are purged and some of them are approved. However, I think that the purged ones are products that no longer exist on Amazon. So I don't, that's, there's no clues there. It's not like, you know, is there anything, is there any reason that this has been kicked off? I can't see anything. It's just, it simply has my review, and there's no column that says, you know, removed for whatever reason, or gives me any information. Like, there's no sort of comment section, if you will, that says this was removed because blah blah blah. So I'm not really any closer.
But you have had an interesting adventure. Which
I
is
have
always,
had an interesting adventure, and I've
which is
got
always good.
A lot of data now.
Has it made you think about your relationship with Amazon?
I guess to some extent, I'm finding myself less keen on Amazon with every passing day. I mean, you know, it's a decent enough service, but what Amazon has done is it's made other retailers play the same game. So it's quite common now that you can have something delivered free within a couple of days or a day. You know, everyone has had to meet Amazon's stupid but brilliant kind of customer service requirements, if you see what I mean. You know, it has upped the game for all online retailers. But I'm also starting to see Amazon prices are not as competitive as they once were. You know, it's not a shoo-in that Amazon will be the cheapest option. In fact, a few things that I've been looking at recently, like some podcasting equipment, it's been much cheaper elsewhere, you know, with similar deals on like free shipping and stuff like that. It's interesting that I kind of feel like we always knew it was going to go this way. Amazon will capture the market, and then when it had it, prices would start to rise. I wasn't expecting it to go up so quickly, but it definitely feels like it's not the compelling offering it once was.
I am going to do this for myself. You have inspired me. And when we're off air, I will ask you for the link on the instructions and of how you did this, and we'll put it in the show notes at uktechshow.com/episodes, if that's okay, Ian.
Yeah, of course it is. I've just found kindle.devices.ereader lowbatteryalert.zip. And now I'm overcome with curiosity.
So presumably that's a log of every time you had a Kindle that was low on battery.
Yeah, I mean, it's not very useful. Not available, battery low. I don't know what they're trying to tell me there. It's hilarious. There's so much stuff in here. And I don't know why they keep some of it. And that's a question in itself.
Maybe I do think there's an extra message that we should consider doing about this and really doing a deep dive on some of the stuff we can find from GDPR requests, because I did this before I deleted my Facebook, and you know, I did it with dating sites from many years ago. I did a show about that for Bloomberg as well, but I've still kept all of those logs. I've got them, so we could go through and do a compare and contrast of what appears in our GDPR requests. What's the weirdest thing we stumble upon? I think that could be quite fun. Maybe we could do it together, Ian.
Yeah, that would be good.
In person.
Yes, it would be.
Nothing says friendship like going through your GDPR data dumps together.
Yeah, and but the problem with it is that they don't let you download it all in one go. You have to download each individual data set individually.
Oh.
And it's extreme. I mean, you know, there's so much of it. As I said, you know, aside from the fact that there's lots of Alexa audio, there's, you know, stuff in here that there is no way to know what half of this stuff actually is. And some of it's just not interesting, like retail region authority 1.zip. I don't care.
Well, if you've put in a request for your data, you know what to do. Send us a message. Send us your most embarrassing thing. I'd love to know if anyone's been particularly shocked at how much they've spent at Amazon. I'll tell you something. I'm terrified because I do use Amazon a lot.
Yeah. It's definitely worth it just for that.
I don't know. It's one of these things you might be better off not knowing. Kind of terrifying. But we'll include the instructions, uktechshow.com/episodes. Look for episode 267. There will be a link in there or in your MP3 file description. Before we move on, I just quickly want to thank our patrons, our beautiful, beautiful supporters who do support us directly. I'm going to thank Guther Man. He's our latest patron, listening to us live as we speak. Thank you, my good man, for joining us as a patron. It's great to have you. You can join Gutherman and others to get the full version of Text Message ad-free. Join our live audience for every recording. You can get our sister show, Extra Message, our back catalogue of unedited shows as well. Some people do seem to enjoy those and much more. Go to patreon.com/UKTech and find out how you can support us. And if you are one of those people, you're going to hear our third discussion story in just a moment, all about why we keep buying DVDs. We got a bit of feedback coming. We had a few bits of feedback, actually, but we're running a little bit long today. But I did want to note this from Raphael, who mentioned that he actually said, I forgot to mention in my last email about the main show where you talked about the unknown podcast apps user. I'm one of them, he says. I use AntennaPod from the F-Droid store. It's working like a charm. Yes, that does not appear in our podcast stats. So, yeah, we have found out one of our unknown podcast apps.
Yeah.
It's Raphael. So,
and that was the email you forwarded to me, wasn't it? Yeah, it was a good email. So yeah. Thanks for that, Raphael.
Regular feederbacker. We don't always discuss our emails on air.
We probably don't do it as much as we should.
We certainly read them all. Always read Raphael's. Well, thanks very much for that, mate. And we're going to now hear just very briefly what's been happening in the wider world of tech this week from Mr. Tom Merritt.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, is civility on the rise online? Maybe. Microsoft has new data to show you. NVIDIA lays down ARM's acquisition plans. It's not going to acquire ARM. There was a big step toward fusion energy in the UK, and Dr. Nikki explained what it means. A new fight to reclassify Uber employees is underway in Massachusetts, and MoviePass is back. And Nate came on the show and helped us answer the question, why exactly is it back? All that and much more at dailytechnewsshow.com.
I was very good.
I bet you were. That sounds like a really interesting show.
I don't think I was very good, particularly over and above this show, but it was a very good episode. I learned quite a lot.
That
great.
Fusion story has been making me laugh all week. It's like, oh, we're 10 years closer to a thing that won't ever happen. I mean, I'm sure it will happen, but I remain very skeptical.
Yeah, I just need a way of containing something that's like a million times hotter than the center of the sun. What could possibly go wrong? thanks for that, Tom. Yes, if you want to go and listen to me on Daily Tech News Show, I was on Friday's episode. That is the 11th of February, so go and check that out. Thank you for that, both for the promo and for being on the show. Tom, Ian, do you have anything else that you wish to say to the lovely ladies and gentlemen before I press play on our outro theme song?
Just like to say bye, really. Thanks for listening.
Well, I've pressed play now, so it's fading in. Do you want to have a go?
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.